And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, Machiavelli wrote that corruption, political corruption, is the decline of virtue among political officials and the citizenry. And the point about political corruption is that it erodes people's trust in their government and makes people feel that the elite is immune from the law, and therefore, why should the law apply to them? It also allows for embezzlement. I mean, the whole point of a corrupt political establishment is the private gain of not only the individual politicians, but more importantly, the private gain of the private interests who these politicians front for. Haven't we seen an enormous growth of political corruption in our politics and in our government, especially since Trump came to power? Not only since then, but especially since then.
Yeah, I mean, the cynics will say, well, it was always like that, but it really wasn't always like that. There certainly were corruptions in, let's put it, more isolated instances that affected large amounts of people. I mean, you talk about the Boss Tweed organization in New York, going back into that stuff.
Well, the whole military-industrial complex, in a certain sense, is... where you have toilets for $1,000, gold-plated hammers, that's all corruption.
That's all corruption, and of course Eisenhower warned against that.
Yeah.
But, and Nixon's corruption was in somewhat of a different nature. But now it seems that, I used to lecture, and I think I've said this a couple of times, that Hillary Clinton was wrong that when she said it was a vast right-wing conspiracy. I said it was really a vast right-wing infrastructure. And now I tell people, I'm getting ready to give another lecture, I don't have the date yet, to a group of political women, and what I say in my lecture is that I'm wrong, that it isn't an infrastructure. It's both an infrastructure and a conspiracy. And it's got, to a certain extent, coordination behind it, or a co-option of a huge group of people now primarily located in the Republic, but not exclusively in the Republican Party.
But really, the point guy is Clarence Thomas. I mean, could you imagine anybody, any single individual, more staggeringly corrupt than Clarence Thomas?
Ken Paxton. we'll talk about Paxton in a minute. Yeah, and for years and years, Thomas has been this way. But, we thought he was only bought off by Harlan Crow. Turns out he may have been bought off by the Koch brothers, who have taken him to their fundraising events, and he seems to have forgotten, quote unquote, to report those trips.
But even if he did report the trips, just the fact that he felt, able to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, the openness, the nakedness of his fealty to, one group is a little staggering. Yeah. Most politicians try to disguise it.
Yeah, well, I think he has a personal issue. I think he feels personally aggrieved. And this is my chance to get for me what other people wouldn't get for me. So I'm going to get everything I can for myself. And, of course, he's aided and abetted by his wife, who seems to have an insatiable desire for power and greed as well. The thing about Thomas, and we can talk about this when we get into the Menendez case as well, is that a few years ago the Supreme Court came down with an opinion in the Bob O'Donnell case in Virginia, Remember, he was the governor, and he was accused of undermining public, the public trust because he accepted gifts.
Oh, and his wife, too.
Yeah. And then they he had government agencies open their doors for the person that he was getting gifts from. And the Supreme Court, and it wasn't that close a decision, as I recall, basically said that you need to have a virtual, you know, catching them passing the envelope. You know, there has to be a quid pro quo that has to be blatant in these matters, and thus really lowered or heightened the bar for conviction. It lowered the bar for corruption.
And Thomas was one of the people who voted that way.
Yeah. And don't forget Alito's in that that group as well.
Right.
So it's harder and harder. Patrick Moynihan would say they've dummied down the definition of corruption.
Well, it's really a classic case of the fox being in charge of the hen house.
Are you talking about Fox literally? Or
well, that's also true.
To push this stuff. I was talking to a professor at the Schemmel Forum this week, and she was discussing democracy and institutions and the lack of trust in institutions. And that seems to be a coordinated effort to break down the institutions. And I said that we're looking at really two tracks in this. Number one is the Bannon track, which is to, and it's, you know, Donald Trump wants to do this, and that's to break down institutions, anything that can put a guardrail on or expose corruption, we've got to get rid of. And that's where you hear the Republican Party talking about, let's get rid of the FBI, let's get rid of the IRS, let's get rid of the administrative state, which is what the Koch brothers want, because that prevents them from just polluting for profit. You know, they wouldn't have to spend money to mitigate their activities.
And they're open about it. They say all of the government regulation prevents us from making the profit, therefore the economy won't expand. Yeah. It's bad for everybody, to be honest.
Right. And then you've got the other side of the coin, which is the capture of the government side of it. That's what Sheldon Whitehouse has been yelling about the Supreme Court, but it's other agencies. You know, you talk about the Supreme Court, you have Justice Gorsuch, but remember about his mother going way back? Was it the Reagan administration?
Yeah, she was Reagan's EPA administrator. She did everything she could to undermine the EPA.
Right, right. So you have that tactic, and of course Trump wants to do that as well. He only wants loyalists. He went in and got rid of State Department and people in under the Justice Department. Remember, he tried to insert Jeffrey Clark into those positions, the indicted Jeffrey Clark, by the way. And that again is just to further the ability to corrupt things, and in that regard, we see the Republican Party being very much in lockstep with them. You hear them all talk about getting rid of these agencies, and getting rid of anybody.
So that's very interesting. When the Republicans get nabbed, their response is get rid of the nabbers. But this week, the Democratic senator from New Jersey, Menendez, got indicted for the third time for corruption. And the governor, Democrat, liberal of New Jersey, immediately said he should resign. They didn't say get rid of the guys who indicted him.
Right.
That's a different response.
It's a different response. A little bit leery of what Governor Murphy said in New Jersey, because he has the power to replace Menendez, which, you know, would be a feather in his cap. But there are a lot of others, members of the Jersey delegation. And of course, you could point to this and say, look at what the Republicans didn't do with our friend George Santos, who's actually, you know, been indicted and whose history of corruption is, for a first-term congressman, is, I think, unequaled in terms of what he's done.
Well, he has no history other than corruption.
Yeah.
But his history doesn't even rise to the level of political corruption. It's not clear that anybody relies on him to help them.
He's just a thief for himself. That's the important thing.
Yeah.
But again, maybe they're envious about what he could feed for himself.
Yeah, maybe. Right.
You know, I mentioned Ken Paxton. You had that issue down in Texas. Don't forget, he's been under indictment for years. We still don't understand why he hasn't come to trial. But, you know, he got indicted. I'm sorry, he got impeached by the House of Representatives in Texas fairly overwhelmingly. And then something happened in the Senate, because he had enemies in the Senate, no, whatever. And it seems a couple of things. One primarily is that Donald Trump, behind the scenes, worked very hard telling people, don't oust him for corruption, or else I'm going to primary you. And the votes, you know, that might have been there all but disappeared. Only two Republicans voted to convict him. And, of course, this is, you know, why would Trump do that? Because he wants corruption to be the standard there.
Yeah, right.
That's the thing. This is what government does. It's corrupt.
Right.
On that. You know, it started to smell a little rat there when they had called his... Remember, Paxton had a mistress who he'd gotten a job for, and they called her to testify, and then they just let her go without testifying. So you could sort of see that there was some sort of a deal in the works at that point. But we had we have these different approaches.
By the way, the approach of the right wing to corruption is not limited to the United States. By and large, right wingers, wherever you look, feel that corruption is their due. Marine Le Pen, the head of the neo-fascist party in France, has just been indicted together with 20 other of the top leaders of her party for stealing money from the European Union when they were delegates to the European Union, French delegates to the European Union. And their defense is, it's just politics. That's how it works.
Yeah. You know, Ruth Ben-Ghiat, who's the expert on authoritarianism and fascism, always talks about that these fascists or authoritarians are all corrupt. That's what they do, and it's innate in them that they do. Mussolini stole money. Remember, he took money and didn't want to feed the people. He said people could do without, on only two meals a day. This kind of kleptocracy, of course, in Nazi Germany was a kleptocratic state. You know, they look at how many artworks did Goering steal, and how much money was stolen from Jews and others on the state. All of this. This is the nature of authoritarianism, and it's raison d'être, you know, it's reason for being, is so that we can steal. And we've seen it act out politically, but in a different way. You want to see, for instance, the biggest thing to always steal from is government, all right? Not just the private sector, but government. So what are we seeing for years? We've seen the Republican Party try to privatize Social Security or to get money into the private sector, because that then takes it out of the beneficiaries' hands and funnels it up to the money managers and stuff. That's an example. Education, we're seeing the other example. Why do you think there's such a great push to do away with public education? And we see in these charter schools where how much corruption exists on things like that.
That's exactly right. And the these corrupt politicians, they have an interesting defense. They say, as Trump said, "I'm so rich, I don't have to steal. Nobody can corrupt me because I don't need their money." And yet, it turns out that they're so rich because they steal money.
Yeah, they want the money, you know, and they don't want to spend their money.
No,
they want to spend
your money.
It's always other people's money. OPM.
Yeah. OPM. That's exactly right.
That's the way of that they do things. Remember Trump when he said, "I'm a billionaire. I don't have to get campaign contributions
right.
from anybody."
Right. And then he didn't spend a nickel.
They didn't spend a nickel of his own money.
Right.
He has these poor suckers out there giving them their hard-earned money and, you know, fooling them into giving monthly contributions rather than just one-time contributions.
Really fooling them, because it was really fooling them. They thought they were giving a one-time contribution, and instead they signed an authorization for a monthly debit of their account without them knowing it.
Right.
And he had to return the money.
Yeah. And, of course, then we have the mini-Trump, Vivek Ramaswamy, you know, and how he made his money with what appears to be a pump-and-dump scheme. On things.
The company that he ran was bankrupt.
Yeah.
I mean, he claims to be a well-regarded and successful entrepreneur. He's a con artist. He wasn't successful at all. He took a company and he used deceptive tactics. He ran a kind of a Ponzi scheme, and in the end it collapsed, and it only took a couple of years. That was his great success.
Yeah. And now in Pennsylvania this week, we had Dave McCormick announcing that he is going to run for Senate, make a second run, and he's going to run against Bob Casey. It looks like the Republicans cleared the field for him. But remember, McCormick was a hedge fund guy and didn't he have...
He is a hedge fund guy, yeah.
Wasn't his hedge fund having something to do with the money that the state had invested?
That's right. His company was one of the outfits that managed state money, and they didn't do a very good job at it.
No.
They performed below market. The state could have put its money in index funds and done better.
Yeah, but he got the high fees.
He got the high fees. He lives in Connecticut in a rented mansion, which is a $16 million property. He claims to live in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
But he votes in Connecticut.
Connecticut. And, being an out-of-stater didn't bode well for Mehmet Oz. McCormick, to his political credit, ran some very sophisticated ads. I thought they were pretty good ads, talking about his Pennsylvania roots. With average Joes, so to speak, people that knew him back in high school and this or that. So he's but he's going to have to spend a lot of money again to disabuse people of the idea that he's really a carpetbagger now.
Yeah, but if roots qualified you to become the head of a country, then every immigrant family could go back and become president of the Ukraine or president of Italy or president of Ireland. Yeah. I mean, that's not... The roots is not what matters. What matters is, who do you actually represent? Where are you?
Yeah.
Where are you local? Where are you now? Where are you now? That's right.
And if
you're lying about where you are now just so that you can run, then, it's an approach, but it's not the American political system. In England, you can do that. In England, you don't have to live in the district that you're elected to parliament for. You can just pick one. That's their law. That's their law.
They have a name for that. I can't remember what it is, but
But we don't have that rule. We have a different rule. We have a territorial rule.
You know, there are some questions about some of the where some people do live. Of course, what happened for years was that people who were from fairly safe districts in Pennsylvania would move to Washington, D.C. and even move their families down there. That was the Rick Santorum's problem?
That was one of his problems.
Yeah.
There were a lot of guys like that. I knew a congressman from New York City who didn't live anywhere near. He lived in Washington. He lived there for 30 years while he kept getting reelected to Congress from New York City.
Yeah, well, Joe McDade had moved down to Virginia many years before. He was in Congress, for 40-some years. Oh, by the way.
But not in Scranton.
No, but
by the way, you know, one of the people being accused of being a carpetbagger is Tommy Tuberville.
He lives in Florida.
He really lives in Florida. And now talk about a guy who's wants to break down the institutions of government. He's doing a really good job on the military.
He's doing an interesting job because his argument is, I'm not doing anything to stop the military's promotion from going through because they could take these up one by one, which is true. They can, and that's what Schumer is now doing. But the point is that by doing that, the promotion becomes a political issue, a partisan political issue. So now you got the appointment of colonels as a partisan political issue, an institution that's supposed to be nonpartisan. Now, I'm not sure that Tuberville understands that or thinks, if he does understand it, that it's bad. Tuberville has the reputation of being the stupidest man in the Senate. Yeah. So it's conceivable he doesn't have the slightest idea what the consequences of what he's doing are. But that is the consequence.
Yeah. And we don't know if there's anybody whispering in his ear behind him and keeping encouraging him to do it and not even filling him in on what the reality is.
Well, who knows how many hits in the head he got as a coach. Coach Tuberville, God.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, the behind the scenes work. That's one of the things, you know, you talk about corruption that kind of is befuddling. You know, the Republican Party now with backing Ukraine or but moving
not,
away
from backing not Ukraine, backing, right.
You know, which goes against everything that they've talked about for a century or so.
But that was a different Republican Party. That was a different Republican Party. Don't forget that.
But don't forget, that then helps one maybe the ultimate grifter, and that's Vladimir Putin, who's, you know, his kleptocratic regime.
I'm not so sure he's the ultimate. I just think he's the most successful.
Well,
managed to capture control of the whole country.
Yeah. The only thing with
Trump is trying. Trump is doing his best.
Yeah, the only thing with the Republicans is if they don't, you know, back Ukraine, what happens to all that defense money that's being spent in various districts? We'll have to see how that works out. But again, that's
the contradiction they have. They want the defense money to be spent because it benefits it produces jobs, but that's not the real benefit. The big profit goes to the owners of these defense factories. But at the same time, they are so, anti-foreign that they don't want to do anything abroad. They are in an intractable contradiction within themselves.
Yeah, which, I've got this conservative friend that I argue with all the time online, and one of the reasons it's hard to argue with him is because he's so contradictory.
Yeah.
You point out one thing and he's back on a contradictory point, he's able to justify everything, which is the Trumpist approach. It doesn't matter whether it makes sense or not. It's just this outcome-oriented type of argument.
No, because the thing that they're interested in, and the thing that does make sense, and the thing that is consistent, is that they want their benefit. They want to be benefited. And they really, it's irrelevant to them what has to happen as long as it works out for them.
Right.
That they don't deviate from. Although, you couldn't make sense out of a man like Lindsey Graham, except that he does whatever he thinks it takes to benefit him and keep him in power. So if he says A on Monday and anti-A on Tuesday, that's perfectly fine. Provided A and anti-A, at the moment that he says it, benefits his ability to stay in power. So he does it. Now, if you pay attention to what he's saying without paying attention to why he's saying it, you can't figure out what he's doing. That's political corruption on Graham's part. That's how it works. That's how it works. And that's why it's so deadly and insidious. Because these guys, it's the ultimate rope-a-dope. They're always, they're always able to slip the attack against them.
Yeah. Well,
a week or two ago, Mitt Romney came out, or his book came out, and there's remarks about J.D. Vance. There's another example.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's another example.
When Romney said it lacked character, but these folks don't care about character.
But you know, Romney is no paragon.
No.
After all, Romney was lobbying Trump to be the Secretary of State.
Yeah.
Trump's Secretary of State. Yeah. You see how far that got Tillerson.
Yeah. That's the other thing is they never seem to learn that the loyalty of the guy on top only runs one way.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it in all these lawyers, you know, Rudy Giuliani begging for money. And it was interesting how Trump said that. Well, I'm not going to give you any money. I'll just raise money for it. He had $100,000 a person fundraiser down at Mar-a-Lago.
Two weeks ago. I don't know.
He raised $1 million, which meant he only got 10 people.
And that's not going to help Rudy because he owes one lawyer $1,300,000. He owes one set of defendants several hundred thousand dollars. He owes another company $400,000. That fundraising didn't help him too much.
And the two women in Georgia, that he defaulted on.
Yeah, owes them a couple hundred thousand today, and he's going to owe them more tomorrow.
Yeah, he owes them their attorney's fees today, but whatever. Jenna Ellis is now finding out the same thing, that Trump isn't going to be paying for her. The only ones Trump's paying for are Walt Nauta and that one other person right now, unless that other person decides
they're the ones who are the most dangerous to him at the moment. He really ought to be paying Giuliani. Giuliani's got a lot on him. But he may figure that Giuliani is so far gone, he doesn't need to be helped.
Yeah.
Who's going to believe Giuliani? If Giuliani tells you the sun is up, you're going to look out the window.
That's right. That's right.
So, yeah. Well, on that sorry note, see you next week.
Yeah, see you next week. Monday's the Day of Atonement. There are plenty of politicians that need atoning, but given their egos, I don't think you're going to see it or hear it.
No. Well, see you next year.
See you next year. Bye.
Bye. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.